chance of showers into the afternoon. With a variable of high cloudiness and gusty wind. Gusty winds at times around the corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset. And a line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold bloods. With tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health. And the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerted, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Cold on the ticket taker's smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition. Yeah. There was no severe weather well into the afternoon, except for kind of a lone gust of wind in the bedroom.
And, ladies and gentlemen, this is Friday, isn't it? Friday. Welcome to the French Connection. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host today. We have one of the most important information sessions going to start in a half hour that you guys have ever heard on radio about the facts that I've been sharing with you for several months now. The person I have on is the gentleman who calls regularly. His name is Chris, and he is always a rocker of a person with information. I have also been in touch with some new people about further information that is even going to deepen this plot, thicken this plot. Somebody who knows information that dates back, this guy that I talked to today was using Ben Friedman's information as a tape. It was on a cassette, and we would hand it out 10 or 15 years ago, more, 20 years ago. He's been working on these subjects for most of his life, and I am going to start working with him as far as getting more information and trying to bring it to you. Of course, I don't get it from one source. I have lots of ways of vetting this information. Most of it is available. All of it is available in books. All of it is available on the Internet or in documents or in libraries or in text from religious institutions. Nothing I am doing on this broadcast is inventing anything. So it will be first rate and first person on many instances. So that's what's happening. On another front, there was a response written to Scott Muffkaka over there, and if you want to go, it'll be up, I guess, soon on Wing TV. The fact is that there is a lot of backbiting, slanderous crap going on this movement, and one needs to wonder what is trying to be done there. When you read my little article here, it makes some of the stuff is just ridiculous, and I won't even give out these people's names so they don't get any web hits, because I don't want to be funneling any of my numbers over to their website, so I won't bother doing that. Just suffice it to say it's full of crap. And the other thing is that I want to come out and say this. I think this is important. If you listen to my archives or have been listening to my show since last year, and as recently as 2 weeks ago and as recently as long ago as January of last year, you will notice that when my colleague, Alex Jones, does a good show or a good interview, I mention it on the radio. You will also notice that I bring up the people he talked about and often refer to him in the subjects that were covered. I don't do that because I hate the guy, and I don't do that because I think he's lying. I do that because I think that Alex has brought out over time a great amount of work. In fact, I'm going to go even further and tell you the truth, that were it not for his information, I would have never discovered much of the truth that I found early on in this. So I have to give him credit for even locating most of this information. And much of it came from looking at the videos early on, and I was mesmerized and dumbstruck by the power of some of the stuff that was being said. Now, of course, you know, not all issues or approaches are the same. We don't have the same approach, and I don't approach my work or my subjects the same as Alex does, and neither do I approach it the same as any. About these subjects, well, of course I'm passionate. We're in a mess, ladies and gentlemen. And if I don't agree with somebody, that doesn't mean I hate them. If I don't agree with somebody, that doesn't mean that I think they're automatically a bad person. I mean, you know, because somebody's on my network, that doesn't mean I'm not allowed to have the same view as them, but it also doesn't mean that I'm their enemy either. And these kinds of simplistic observations are dangerous and stupid. I mean, I don't do that in my real life. I have differences with almost everybody around me for one reason or another. Everyone does. But this doesn't mean that I don't have them in my life. It doesn't mean that I don't trust them on certain informations and on certain things. And it's ludicrous to even think such craziness. And so, you know, when we're taking a look at some of this stuff, and then, of course, when people start writing lies, and I can give you a great example, and then when on Monday we'll talk about others. But, I mean, we had this guy Carl Schwartz do a piece on me. And I won't go into this other person because I don't want to give him any publicity. But Carl Schwartz said that I was from Kansas City. Now, I've told you, I've only driven through the place. That my wife, I live off my wife. My wife supports me. Well, what you don't know and that I don't brag about in my life is that I'm a veteran. And I'm also disabled from my service in the military. I was hurt terribly bad. Spent almost a year in bed as a result of injuries that I received. And, you know, that entitled me to a certain amount of support because I'm still having terrible health problems, as I share with you all the time on this radio's program. I'm living with the injuries for the rest of my life, and they've gotten worse over time, not better, much worse. And the simple fact of the matter is that from mealy-mouthed, spineless geeks who want to lie to you that have stuff to say about me, that I live off my wife, this other guy Muffcocker over here, whatever the heck he is, Scott Muffcocker, he's made all kinds of lying accusations about me, which is what his stock in trade, ladies and gentlemen. But we're going to bring up some other stuff on Monday and let you have a chance to send me some emails if you want. And when we come back, we're going to do a little bit of news, and then we're going to go into our great interview with my friend Christopher when we come back. And ladies and gentlemen, French Connection, Daryl Bradford Smith, your host. I am thewitness.com is the website, and I am thewitness@hotmail.com is the contact information. You know, this is a big job, and it's been a lot of stuff happening over the last few weeks. And boy, I smell something on the horizon here financially. And boy, I watch dollar values and gold values, and I see all kinds of activity that's a little bit disturbing. And even the mainstream media now is starting to talk about the fact that there are imbalances. It's worse than imbalances, but this is what they're using. There are imbalances in our economic system that are beginning to look dangerous. Well, one of them, of course, that is I've been talking about for the last year is the housing bubble. Of course, when you run prices up on the houses over double and 100% in a five-year period, that's 20 to 25% inflation a year, ladies and gentlemen. And here they're talking about inflation running at 2% a year. Okay. And talking about oil prices. I mean, 5 years ago, oil was at like $15, $18, $20 a barrel. It actually dropped 3-4 years ago to $10 just before it shot up. And now it is at $68 or $69 and heading higher, probably toward $100. 80 probably the first next plateau that it'll hit, $80 a barrel. So all of you guys worrying about a cold winter and heat and gas for your car and Just all kinds of stuff happening. The middle class is being dismantled by these policies. And it was not this was a designed thing, ladies and gentlemen. Take a look. You know, we've been listening to this stuff forever. And we know they've designed this for us. The implosion that is going to happen as a result of these policies that we've had sent to us by our controllers, by Heinz Kissinger, bringing them back from the controllers over here in Europe, sending them back over to America. It is expected that this economy is going to implode. It's expected. And I believe that these handlers of ours that have been running our lives for as long as we've been alive and our families, our parents and our grandparents have been alive, their goal is to shut the borders down of America and to create a Soviet-style police state where the country lays fallow for generations. And while they implement whatever other crazy ideas these people have, which we talk about frequently here, and we will be talking about just after this segment here with my guest, we're also going to talk about this man, Myron Fagan, and the importance of some of the things he laid out. Also, some things about like the De Medici family and their fortunes and how they migrated and different other people from Spain that were part of the Moors. And there was a Jewish community there where they said they have a direct descended line from the Davidians, who happens to be today's Messiah. And there are indications it's not a Rothschild. How's that one? Anyway, we're going to talk about all these issues, and we're going to try to move the ball down the field a little bit with intelligent and well-studied and well-researched information, because that's what we try to do here. This is a very complex history that we're trying to unfold before you, and I am learning much of it as you are. And I'm bringing it to you as it arrives to me vetted. I vet it. I look at it. I find the sources. I look at the books. You know, oftentimes people want to put stuff on my site because I do get, you know, between 8 and 15,000 people a day on this website, and that's a decent run of people. And so they often want me to put stuff on the site, and I'm not against helping other people to put stuff on my site, but most of the time it's opinion pieces, and I'm not going to be responsible for opinions other than my own on my site. But if they've got well-researched stuff that's pertinent to these issues, I would be more than happy to take a look at putting them up. So you know that if you've done some good research work, like my friend Anonymous Andy, who did some work with me, and then I looked over the work, and we were able to get that up on the site, I will do that for you. And you know, this is research stuff, guys. This is information trying to explain to the world, explain to the American public and people around the world that are listening, just where we are in this conspiracy and how late an hour it is and what progress they're making against us. And frankly, it's been a devastating five-year period here. In this last 5 years, they have made some huge strides against us. And what's astonishing to me is the resistance has been so limited by the American public. It just shows you what kind of control they have. I remember Chris, my guest today, saying to me, you'd be surprised what money can buy. It can buy governments. It can buy news. It can buy loyalty. It can buy lots of things. It can buy lies and high truths. And all of those things have happened to the American public. And then they've been mired in nonsense, taught to pay attention to foolishness, and dumbed down in their education, not to ask questions. It's worked, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a country full of 300 million sheeple that there is a fringe group. You're part of it. Small. It's becoming more vocal. And becoming educated as we speak. You are, as well as me, over here in France and around the world. People are educating themselves as to just what these folks have been doing and are doing. Interesting stuff, I think. Tiring stuff for for an old war horse like me. I just keep trying to put the stuff out and, Anyway, what else is on my mind here? I'll pull on your coat about a few other things here. I mean, I got a weekend coming up here, and yeah, it's going to be nice to take a break from all this, this information. It just gets wearing on me, but, talk about election theft. Talk about, the way that the American government, I mean, can you imagine finding out, and I think everybody in America knows now that there was election fraud in both elections, and that you wouldn't have, I would have never guessed that the American public would not have flipped their lid. You know, we were led to believe that America would stand up against that kind of criminality, that kind of tyranny, and they didn't. And we had a kleptocracy installed in our nation. And as we speak, stuff is flooding out. I mean, think about this. $2.6 trillion stolen from the Pentagon under Controller Dov Zokheim. A dual citizen rabbi who was in charge of accounts at the Pentagon. You make sense out of that, ladies and gentlemen. $2.6 trillion with a T. Unaccounted for. Don't know where it went. How about the hundreds of airplanes and air equipment sold to Israel at scrap value, brand new out of the box? Sleight of hand, rob the bank. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we have Christopher going to be on today. Just Christopher. And he's going to fill your ears with all kinds of information when we return. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Darryl Bradford Smith, your host. We're back. And my guest for the next hour, I don't know if we'll stay longer or not, but next hour at least, is somebody I've been talking to now for just a few short weeks, and his information has been extraordinarily accurate. And much of it has been new to me, not new to him, and many people in the world know this stuff. In fact, I've started talking to people, more and more people, about these subjects, probably because I'm broaching these on the radio and they're calling me. And as a result of that, where the education is broadening and thickening here. But his name is Christopher. I'll leave it at that. Unless he tells me I can use his last name, I won't do it. And I'm going to bring him up right now. Chris, are you with me?
Hi, Darryl.
Hey, Chris. You're a little bit low there. I got to get the engineers to turn you up.
Well, the story of my life.
Well, you know, how you feeling?
Not bad. It's getting better each day.
Well, you know, I've been doing some of my own research on some of the things we've discussed because, of course, I have to. It's part of my responsibility. In that research, I found out a few things that I wanted to bring up right away here. There is a family that was living in medieval Spain that's often very rarely talked about. That's not Rothschild.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very powerful and anointed family. In fact, they say that the real Messiah that they're claiming is actually from this particular family, and he's already been determined. And there are connections to, interesting that this person told me these things, and I was stunned because I've heard this one other time. Do you know any information about that?
I don't, but I have always suspected that there may have been somebody behind it because the Rothschilds accumulated a vast fortune very quickly. And I suspected that either they or someone behind them was slated as the Messiah.
Well, it's not them, actually, according to the person I spoke to. And, in fact, Heinz Kissinger has to bend over prostrate in front of him.
Well, that's not new to humanity, I'm afraid.
Well, no, and it's not new for Heinz Kissinger either. He likes that position, I'm at, from what I hear. but I'm joking, guys. You know, I like to make jokes. Here's the thing. This stuff goes deep. It's real to these folks. But he also told me that there are actually two separate distinct camps on this issue, one Ashkenazi camp and one Sephardic, and they do not see eye to eye.
Well, you're covering ground I'm not familiar with, so I'm hesitant to comment on it until
okay.
I've had an opportunity to investigate it for myself.
Well, that's all fair. You have looked into Myron Fagan's work, haven't you?
I listened to it, and I think much of it is very important, but I think there are also some pitfalls in it that should be pointed out.
And do you think some of those pitfalls are basically shifts in their planning as more than an outright errors at the time? Do you think basically he had it right at the time, but these people do morph their planning?
That's part of it. I also think he relied upon some documents and some allegations that he ought to have known were false or falsified. And what comes to my mind is the Albert Pike Mazzini letters, which I think are falsifications on their face.
And why would Pike's letters be considered falsifications?
Well, he mentions terms and things which didn't exist at the time that the letters are alleged to have been written. The letters themselves don't exist. It has all the telltale signs of a classic forgery. Forgery is the wrong word, fabrication.
Fabrication. Well, that's what somebody asked me the other day about the Protocols of Zion. They said, they're forgeries, so why should we trust them? I said, well, the word forgery, by its definition, means a copy of the original.
Well, that is a different issue. That would be an issue I would like to discuss. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, I suspect, were written by the Tsarist police based upon their espionage work, and that they ultimately go back to Judaism on many points, and that there is a certain degree of authenticity to them, even though it's claimed that they were plagiarized from Maurice Joly's work. But his work itself can be tied to Crémieux and to others. There was a woman, a Russian woman, I believe, named Paquita Dushishmarov, who wrote a book about it. And she brought out a lot of facts related to it. And there was actually a trial in Bern, Switzerland, to determine whether they could be published or not based upon the allegation that they were forgeries.
Okay.
The trial was not successful. It was a corrupt trial, and it was appealed, and ultimately the court said that it could not say that they were fabrications. And when the protocols appeared in America, the American government took them very seriously and instigated investigations. And Brandeis and his crew put an end to it. And in England, the London Times, owned by Lord Northcliffe, took them very seriously and published an article, I believe it was called The Jewish Peril in 1920. And they took the protocols very seriously and called for an investigation. And eventually, Lord Northcliffe's paper was wrested from him, and some allege he was poisoned to death.
Uh-huh. And so what we see here are enough evidences that there are reasons to take seriously at least the points that are being made in there, if not on its face, certainly in its spirit.
Yes, and I think many of the points go back to Kabbalistic writings, back to the Old Testament, back to the Zohar and other Jewish writings over the centuries.
Well, what are the
you don't have to depend on it, is what I'm saying.
That's right.
It's reflective of what came before, and we have factual sources that no one denies. But I think when you mention the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, it's important to point out that it's a controversial subject, and many scholars have attempted to prove that they are fabrications. I think both sides have to be told on that issue to give a responsible and informed representation of the status of the document at this time.
And a court has actually found it to be a forgery?
No.
One court?
No, a court
probable judge, for a forgery?
No. The court was unable to determine that it was a fabrication, even though it was a corrupt trial, a very corrupt trial.
No, the one in Bern, Switzerland, yeah?
That's what I'm speaking of.
Okay.
In that trial, the initial trial judge was corrupt, and evidence wasn't allowed to be presented, et cetera, et cetera. The plaintiffs were suing to prevent the publication of them. And the defendants it was very similar to the Irving trial. They weren't allowed really to present their case, and it was a corruption of justice in the appellate court threw it out. But even in the initial trial, the court was unable to determine that they were fabrications. They have never been proven false. Now, I would say that the burden of proof rests on those who say that they're genuine and not on those who say that they're false. And if you want, we could discuss the whole history of how they came about and what they alleged.
Well, we have discussed that on the show before. We have lots of ground to cover, so we'll leave that particular subject maybe for another day or even later in this interview possibly. But I do want to talk about something you mentioned to me earlier about Nazism and Zionism having a merger in many of the leadership of the Third Reich, and I want to talk about some of the people who've been tagged as actual Jews within Hitler's regime, and how you came upon such information, and so if we can vet it here at this moment. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we have more from my guest Christopher today. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host today. Nice to have you with me. It's cold out there, ladies and gentlemen. It's like 14 degrees outside, and wow, it's just bitter outside here. Europe is in a deep freeze right now. I don't know how the weather's been across America, but boy, over here it is just plain cold. I have a guest with me today. His name's Chris, and we've been actually conversing and working together on doing some research, and I asked him to be on today to kind of forward some research that he's been doing to you all. And I was a little bit stunned by some of that information that I just brought up before the break, that much of the upper leadership of certain parts of the regime that the Nazis put together were actually staffed by Jewish people.
Yes. A good example would be Reinhard Heydrich, who was head of the SS, and it is alleged came up with the final solution of the Jewish question plan to exterminate the Jews in the Wannsee Conference in 1942. But I think much of that information is misrepresented. The Wannsee Conference never proposed the idea of the extermination of the Jews. And the expression, the final solution of the Jewish question, is a Zionist phrase. And it refers not to the extermination of the Jews per se, but to the assimilation of the Jews, and therefore the alleged suicide of the Jewish race by open-minded Jews who were intermarrying with Gentiles and adopting Gentile culture. And the Zionists in the 1800s utilized this phrase to identify that effect, and then they proposed an alternative final solution to the Jewish question, that of a Jewish state. In other words, when the Nazis spoke of the final solution to the Jewish question, they were speaking of Zionism and not the extermination of the Jews.
Okay, and that's a theory.
No, that's proven. Julius Streicher, another Nazi Zionist of Jewish descent, said explicitly that in his trials at Nuremberg. Adolf Eichmann, both in his autobiographical story of his Nazi history and at his trials in Israel, stated the same thing. And the minutes of the Wannsee Conference state exactly that, that the Madagascar plan had failed and that therefore they would hoard together the Jews and move them to the east and create a Jewish state probably somewhere in Poland or Russia, which was in conformity with the wishes of the Zionists. It was all a Zionist plan.
Well, now, how many other people were also of Jewish descent in this upper leadership?
Many. Hitler himself was of partial Jewish descent and went to extraordinary means to conceal it. He had a half-sister who was Jewish who he murdered because she was going to bear the child of a Jewish man. Joseph Goebbels was known as the little rabbi when he was at school. Both Goebbels and Heydrich were teased as children because they were of Jewish descent. All this is well documented. I don't think anybody disputes it, though some may dispute the idea that they actually were of Jewish descent. I don't think anyone knowledgeable of the facts disputes the fact that they were teased because of their Jewish origins and that there were many Nazis who were not of Jewish origin, who objected to Goebbels and Heydrich and Eichmann and others based upon the fact that they were Jewish. And Eichmann said that there were 50 SS men who were 100% pure Jews and that they were some of his best men in the SS.
Now, this this is all revelations to most Americans. These are shocking facts to many Americans. We have been sold a bill of goods that would not match this particular menu. And how do we square the circle, Chris, with the fact that America has been completely kept in the dark on this, and now they're trying to make its discussion an illegal matter, aren't they?
Yes, and it is an illegal matter. It's an illegal matter in Germany and Austria, where most of the documentation is kept. So scholars who have spoken out about it can't travel to those countries to conduct further research, and citizens of those nations are forbidden to discuss it or to investigate it. And that itself is a telltale sign that they're covering something up. But this is not my revelation. There was a book that didn't get the attention it deserved, written by Henneke Kardell, titled Adolf Hitler Begründer Israels. There's an English translation, Adolf Hitler, Founder of Israel. And he was brought to his awareness of what had happened by another book by Dietrich Brander, which is called Before Hitler Kam, Eine historische Studie, which means Before Hitler Came, an Historical Study. And in both of these books, the Jewish lineage of many of the top Nazi leadership is traced out. And their connections, you know, Hitler's famous Dr. Morell, who pumped him up with drugs, was Jewish and probably was his connection to the Zionists in the outside world, and was whisked away after the war, not to be little heard from since.
Now, how about some of the other, big chiefs in that whole thing and his generals? They were actually from German stock then, as far as you know?
Some were, some were not. A key figure was his lawyer, Dr. Hans Frank, who was really a vicious person and persecuted the Jews of Poland, but was himself 100% Jewish.
Oh, boy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's quite a factoid there, and I want you to wrap your brain around it. He's given the names and the references, and that's how powerful this stuff is. When we come back, we have a lot more to come with my guest, Christopher and Daryl Bradford-Smith, French Connection. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Daryl Bradford-Smith here with you today on this Friday broadcast of the French Connection, Genesis Communications Network, and great to be with you here today. It's almost 3 or 4 minutes before the 11 o'clock hour here in central France, and I've been talking to a researcher I work with named Chris. Christopher is an American living in the States and doing his due diligence to try to bring some facts to the French Connection and help us learn as much as we can about these subjects. Chris, I got to ask you, you ever heard much about the Pink Triangle Boys and the Project Paperclip, and where are the people that were brought in that program, according to what I know? Were they the Zionist Jews that were imported after the Second World War?
I don't think so. You're speaking of different things. The Pink Triangle was a patch that was put upon people in concentration camps to identify them as homosexuals, just as Jews were required to wear a yellow star. I think the communists and alleged social deviants were forced to wear a red triangular patch, and there were other designations for gypsies, etc.
Well, the Pink Triangle Boys, actually, according to Kay Griggs, were brought into America of German descent in very large numbers after the war.
I'm sure that's true, and the significance of the Pink Triangle is that they were accused homosexuals, which was illegal under the German laws. The paperclip thing had more to do with scientists. I doubt that most of them were homosexuals who developed the rocket program, like Wernher von Braun and others. So I don't think that those two things are the same thing.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you cleared that up, because I was not aware that I know there were a large number of people that were brought to this country from the collapse of Germany, and many of them were not the best of character, were they?
No, but some of them did get a raw deal because they were brought to America, and they were exploited for their knowledge, and they exhibited great loyalty to America, and then when they had been used up, they were tossed back to Germany, and allegations were made against them which weren't true, and a lot of hype went up. Here I'm speaking of people involved in Project Paperclip, like Werner von Braun.
And there were a lot of what I understand from the paperclip situation, where they were brought here. Much of their technology was actually stolen, and then it was claimed by the new by their hosts, and they never received the full credit for it.
That's very true. That's absolutely true. We never would have had the moonshot and all the other rocket technology, and much of the jet technology that we had after the war, were it not for German scientists who were brought here under Project Paperclip.
Well, we understand now from other research going on that the moonshots may be in question as well. But that's for another day and another issue. Here's the other thing that I want to discuss right now. I mean, we've talked about bringing this information to the American public. It's been more readily available here in Europe than it has been in America. I was talking to somebody who hails from the Annenberg family.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me some really eye-opening information that really just knocked me back. And I want to share some of that with you so that you maybe can give it your take on it. Ladies and gentlemen, when we return, more from Christopher and Daryl Bradford Smith on The French Connection.